I'll be too nervous to. I'll probably lost for words.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Loss of Words betting podcast. Back in on a Monday night with Bradley Todd. Brad, hello.
Good evening, Tom. How you doing?
Yeah, I'm good. We've had a couple of days to get over our wounds on a Sunday, haven't we, recently? We've been doing these on a Tuesday night. So, yeah. Potentially still a little bit raw, Brad. I mean, I was fortunate enough in the sense that by the time I'd woken up on Sunday, a bit of a lazy start to the day. Bairstow had lost, basically. I mean, mm-hmm. I woke up and saw that he'd been as much as four shots clear after 12 holes. So it was obviously still a bit of a dagger that he didn't get the job done, but at least I didn't have to watch it unfold. But then what I did have to watch was Afib Barmrat not get the job done for you. Svensson beat him, which is someone that we've talked about basically all season. Before the season started, and then we go over to the PJ Tour in the evening, and I think, okay, well, at least I can sort of cheer home Mackenzie Hughes. And for whatever reason, I think a lot of people were like this, but like, for whatever reason, I didn't fancy Mitchell at all yesterday.
No, I didn't at all either.
I don't know why, really. I don't know what gave me that kind of impression. I just felt like his putting would get in the way or something, but I think
the hole out on the last, I felt like he had a bit of smoz there, so I feel like sleeping on that lead. I think, I don't know, his name might have felt already on the trophy after that, and then he's gone out.
Mackenzie Hughes really well placed to sort of benefit from him going away. Then it looked like Cam Young was going to do it, and then Peter Malnati from the top rope
took charge.
Does everyone? I'm hoping it could potentially be bucket hat season, as we'll come on to in a bit. But look, popular winner in the end, wasn't he? I mean, he's been getting a load of shit recently, Malnati, about he's just in because he's on the player board, and that's why he's getting all these invites and things like that. And then all of a sudden he goes and wins the tournament, and to be honest, looked pretty impressive in doing so. So
can't root against him, can you? I mean, it was a beautiful interview afterwards, very emotional, and shows how much it meant to him. And look, he deserved it, and it was there for the taking. And Mackenzie Hughes, he went favourite down the back nine, and then he just sort of back-to-back bogeys. I think there's a water ball involved as well, and cost him. And then it was Cameron Young's opportunity, and he did not have it. He went in the trees down the last, and that was that. Yeah, it was, but it was a nearly week, wasn't it? So the process is good, which is the thing you've got to take away from it. I think that we're getting people in contention. I mean, Bairstow, he got really unlucky. I'll go back to it. He got really unlucky. I think it was the 16th hole where he had that bogey, which if he didn't have that, he would have been in the playoff. But yeah, if he was a right hander, he would have had a much better, his feet would have been on the green, and it would have been a much easier shot. But him being a lefty, his feet were uneven, like on a downward slope. And yeah, it became a much tougher shot. But look, getting them two players, him and Keredec, and in the playoff, who, to be honest, I'd never really fancied him, but like, against Svensson on that par five, you know, I was kind of hoping it would go to the path like 17th at some point, you know, a bit more of a level playing field. He just hits it that much further past him. But it wasn't the case. And it did feel inevitable, Svensson winning that in the end. But what can you do, mate? We've got to keep trying, keep plugging away.
I think that's the thing, mate. I think you're hitting that on the head. Like, it's just the process. Like, and I think there's an element, and this isn't to make excuses for the fact that we didn't get the win yesterday. Like, I think all you can do is tell people who's going to get there and how they're going to get there. You can't hit the shots for them, and they definitely don't want me to do that. So I think there's obviously an element of luck in any sort of golf bet, really, I think. And, you know, we've been on the fortunate side of things at times, and, you know, this time we weren't. And I just think as long as you're putting yourself repeatedly in the areas, which we are, then
And a small word on Paul Casey as well, because he did manage to place, and again that Liv form, you know, coming over from Liv and performing. He probably should have done better on the final day. It was there, wasn't it, again for him or someone to come from behind. You expect someone probably of his caliber to shoot what Svensson score and win, but there you go. Still a good performance from him.
Yeah, I think it kind of, most people were in this kind of camp, right, that like, if you're going to take one from the top, it had to be Casey over Lowry. I think that was pretty uniform in that decision. I think people were well rewarded for making that decision. I think it's probably the right word for it. interestingly, on someone like Casey, I wonder if this is like the first time he might have been like, do you know what, I wish I was still on the PGA Tour. Or because he is now playing well a couple of weeks out from Augusta, knowing he's not going to be there.
I'm sure it stings. Sure it does.
I think that's probably the first time, maybe, because like, otherwise he's not been playing well, has he? He's had injuries, he's not been playing well, and probably sort of was ready to ride off into the sunset a little bit, and then all of a sudden he's had a bit of a renaissance this season. And
yeah, he looks really good. Well, he looks pretty steady. I think I can't say his putting is easy on the eye.
But yeah, look, I'm not going to sit here and feel sorry for him. The decision.
No, right? Exactly.
And I don't think they want you to feel sorry for him. I think that's the one thing I would say, is I don't think there's obviously some that come out and make comments about rankings and things like that. For the most part, most of them go and just kind of live with their decision, right? And it, you know, it is what it is. So yeah, that's kind of a look ahead of, or look back of the weekend, and maybe a slight regret at the Masters, apart from the fact that the guy's not playing. But let's go into this week. On the face of it, felt like a pretty disappointing week in the golfing calendar, right? But I actually think these are two pretty exciting betting events. And also, Indian Open obviously throws up a pretty difficult test in DLF. And then the Houston Open course I like as well.
It's going to be the first. I thought that as well. Two tough tests, eh?
Yeah. And I think also, like, is it the first time we've seen a Houston Open at this time of year? Like, hasn't it been like, since it's gone to Memorial Park, like it's been November, isn't it? So I wonder if that'll just sort of change things as well. So plenty to actually look forward to, I think. So let's go to the first event of those two, the Hero Indian Open. Bresman Skoygaard, the 14-1 favourite, Jordan Smith 20-1, Ewan Ferguson 22-1, Anirvan Lahiri 22-1, Richard Mansell 25-1, Bernd Wiesberger, Yannick Paul and Joost Louten all 25-1. Fred, are we at a point where Rasmus Højgaard shouldn't be this clear favourite?
I think so, yeah. I mean, we all know how talented he is, but when has he ever gone off favourite and won? And you know, and he doesn't look that strong in contention either. He's just always an easy pass for me. I don't think he should be that price.
Like I was obviously really strong on Rasmus Højgaard's season overall. I think it's going to be a big year for him. I do think he's going to get his PGA Tour card. And look, he's consistently, you know, stroke average-wise, second best player in the field and all those sort of things. Like, he is sort of playing solidly. But in terms of just pure outright winning opportunities, he's still not really had more than one this season. And, yeah, I just... I think he's too short. Like, I can understand him being favourite, but I thought they would just be closer together than they are. I thought 14.
Yeah. His round four scoring average is really poor.
Yeah.
It's really poor.
And this course as well throws up horrendous amounts of sort of double bogey opportunities, and it feels like he will make them. And look, I'm quite willing to just look silly at the end of the week and he goes and wins it by five or whatever, but it just doesn't feel like that sort of tournament, Brad, where anyone's going to feel that comfortable. And I certainly wouldn't make someone a 14-1 favourite. So
quite
happy to pass on that. Then you've got a collection of players that I think you have to make a decision on. So
yeah,
I think I'm okay with Smith being 20-1 and not really worrying about it. Ewan Ferguson, I think, is essentially the most solid of this kind of trio.
Yeah. I think Ferguson and Smith are both suited. But yeah, like you, I think you can pass upon them. At the price, just about on Ferguson. I think, as you said, Ferguson, I think, stands out as a better chance than Smith.
And Lahiri's obviously going to get the home, you know, the home bump, right? But he's not, like, he was playing really well on Liv last year and he hasn't necessarily replicated that.
But then you can look at his result at Liv Jeddah, where he was, I think he finished sixth.
Yeah.
And that was a really good result. I mean, I think the only ahead of him are like some good players ahead of him. So I just feel as though he isn't playing that bad. And when he opened up at 28,
yeah,
I felt like between him and Sharma, I'd like it's a no-brainer, because I think Lahiri's won like 3 or 4 times in India as well. He's won, obviously, won the Hero Indian Open as well, which he always says is one of his greatest ever moments, which would be, right, winning your national open. And yeah, so I think he's an interesting one. And look, they all want the ranking points as well, like coming over from there. They all want it. So yeah, he's definitely playing for something. So he's an interesting. No, I like the hero, but when he opened up at 28, it was, looked a bit of a no-brainer. But at 22s, I think there's probably better value now out there.
Well, let's come on to those players we think are better value. Now, first one I want to sort of point out is the one that we're joint decision on, and it's Bernd Wiesberger. I think I played Wiesberger slightly earlier in the season, took a chance, and didn't necessarily deliver. But it's been really steady, Brad. You know, that is the word for it more than anything else so far.
Yeah.
21st, 37 from the Paris back-to-back 16s. But one, it's getting better almost every week. And you know, there's been a big gap in between those last two events, 16th in Bahrain and 16th last week at Singapore. And there was a 6-week gap in between those two. And it's the ball striking that's standing out now, isn't it, mate? It's like sixth in strokes gained approach last week, 10th in tee to green. Has played the golf course. He was really steady here. His one and only start, he was 23rd. Again, he was better placed at the halfway stage, 12th going into the weekend. In terms of just sheer quality, Brad, there isn't a better player in the field. He's an 8-time DP World Tour winner. He's a Ryder Cup player. I know there's a player you're going to come on to next who's, you know, almost decorated in terms of DP World Tour wins. But overall, in terms of what they've achieved, I think Wiesberger's, you know, rightly in this mix of players, and arguably still, even at 25-1, he's coming from 30s, still slightly overpriced.
I think so, mate. Yeah, he was an easy choice. As you said, he's just been rock solid since returning to the DP World Tour. I think he's been inside the top 10 for tee to green in his last three events, and his irons look to be trending in the right direction as well. He was sixth on approach last week, so he's just crying out for a better week on the greens. That's all it is.
Yeah.
And I think it's worth noting he's got bags of experience in this part of the world as well. Like, he's been a previous winner in Korea, China, 2 runner-ups and a 3rd in Malaysia. Okay, it's not India, but you know, he's very well equipped to like play in like hot weather and Bermuda greens, and yeah, I think that excellent record in this part of the world definitely caught my eye. And yeah, with his experience and his rock solid game, he's just an absolute no-brainer for me. So yeah, his 25-1 is absolutely fine, isn't it?
Yeah, and look, I think a lot of people will just point to the fact, he went to live and his form dipped off and he's not the same player anymore. But there was actually injury troubles in between all of that as well. And I think that's easy to forget, right? I think people just want to quickly jump on the live thing. And look, I mean, I'm giving it more airtime than the conversation really deserves. But like I think there's a misconception of what's happened to him. And I think it's more injury than it is anything else. And it seems to be that now he's kind of got back into his rhythm. We're getting the same Bernd Wiesberger that we were sort of knew and loved, if you ever did knew and love him. But like I think he's a big time player in a weak field and available at a decent price. So yeah, Bernd Wiesberger for both of us 25-1 will make us both happy after last weekend.
Certainly will.
Who is the closest challenger to him, Brad?
I think Youth Lawson is. Yeah, I think, you know, weirdly, you can get 26-1 on him. I've never seen that before. But yeah, 25-1 with Unibet and Betfred. Yeah, it was another easy choice for me at the top of the market. Almost felt a bit too obvious. He hasn't had the best of starts of the year, but he finished 11th in Singapore last week, closed with a round of 66. So you're hoping he can carry that momentum over into this week. It was this time last year that he came alive with back-to-back third place finishes. I think that came in Thailand, and then he was third at this course, DLF. And he's also finished 9th here in the past. It's just the type of test that will suit him. He loves to grind. He prefers tough scoring conditions. His win at Celtic Manor and his record at Valderrama over the years, just to name a few, was good examples of that. It's just experience in course management is going to be so crucial this week. And the course being so tricky, he just ticks those boxes. It's just what he loves, that challenge. Marcel Syme won last year. That was his first win on the DP World Tour for like 9 years, I think it was, 8 or 9 years. And it hasn't been as long for Loughton. His last win came in 2018, but I can envision a similar sort of comeback win for him this week. You know, he has the game. He's threatened enough to win last year as well. He kept getting himself in contention. How close he actually came to winning, I'm not entirely sure, but he was there or thereabouts quite a few times last season, and this was one of them. And yeah, I strongly fancy him to go well after his after he showed something last week.
Yeah, look, I think for me it's just a couple of times too many for me that I've been burnt, which is funny, we've just been talking about, but I've been kind of thinking Hugh Loughton was a home run pick and it just didn't play out that way. And I mean, look, I have no argument about the actual case for him. I think he's an excellent golfer who, like you say, spent his time last year coming back from a pretty torrid run for him. I think he struggled pretty badly with, not with COVID itself, but during the COVID period. And I think now he's kind of finding his way back. He did it last year, and he's weirdly kind of, I kind of know Loughton's is really consistent player, and it hasn't been that sort of thing. It's been sort of a bit up and down this year, isn't it? But the 11th last week obviously is a good thing ahead of a course that he really likes.
Yeah, I think that's what I noticed. Like, he hasn't got off to a best start, but what I liked was that it was actually last year that he had a similar sort of start to the season, then caught fire when he came to Asia.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm hoping that's a similar case. Obviously, the 11th in Singapore last week. Also, you know, vouchers for that theory. So yeah, I'm kind of hoping it's a similar thing this week.
Yeah, like it a lot. A bit further down for your next pick, obviously. So we'll come on to mine. So it's not, there's a quite big gap really in the next couple of picks. This one's coming a little bit as Ben's put him up, but Matthias Schwab, best price 66-1, 6 places. I would go with the 60-1, 7 places and nab the extra place for the sake of a few points. I think it's easy to forget, Brad, how good Matthias Schwab was before COVID. And I know I've been referencing that a couple of times with different players already this podcast, but I think when there's going to be this interesting case study, if anyone wants to do it, of what player, what position players were in their career before that happened, especially for the ones that were kind of on the periphery of the challenge on DP World Tour. So I'm thinking about Jesper Svensson, and everyone's sort of saying, you know, he's broke through, but it's not like he's young, he's 29. But if you think, he probably could have done that at 26 if there wasn't a couple of years of really struggling to get cards, right? So anyway, all that to say that I think Schwab was in a really good place before he kind of split his time between the PGA Tour and DP World Tour. And he had 9 top 10s in 2019, 2 of them runner-up finishes, 4 more top 5 finishes. The runner-up, one of those runner-up finishes was a playoff loss in Turkey. He was also 5th or top 5 in the WGC as well. He was so good. And I know, look, I know that was a long time ago now. You know, we're actually talking about almost 5 years since those last kind of top 5 finishes. But it seems to be that he's kind of working his way back to that. Not close to it yet, but I would rather be on this kind of part of the journey than be too late. So he's made 4 straight cuts. 23rd in Kenya, he's actually 15th going into Sunday. 35th in South Africa, he's 16th going into Sunday. And then last week, he finished 43rd, which on the face of it is disappointing, but he was 5th going into Sunday. And I just wonder, Brad, whether he just pushed a bit too hard. He shot a fine around 77. Seems to me he just kind of went for the win, which I admire, but also obviously hurts his kind of finishes.
Yeah.
But yeah, like he's been 30th or better in strokes gained approach in every event in that run, 38th or better in tee screen every event of that run, 7th and 14th in 2 of those. And his course form's great, 4th here on debut, followed up with an 18th a year later, where he's 6th going into the final round. He's got exactly the type of game, Brad, that I want. And actually, on you know, in terms of career, he's probably slightly more established than the couple of players I'm going to come on to, despite the fact that those the two after have actually got wins. That's the one knock on Schwab, is even at his peak, he didn't get the win.
No, he didn't. But Christ, he was such a steady player before, on the European Tour, wasn't he, before heading to the PGA Tour. And, yeah, he looks like a player on his way back. And maybe, as you said, I think, you know, that 77 could be just he hasn't been in that position for a while. He might have thought, yeah, if I shoot a low one here, I might win this. He might have just the occasion got to him. He got off to a really good start. I think he had two birdies in his first few holes. So he might have got a bit excited and went to shit. But
I think, like Jesper Svensson showed what happens if you got yourself in that start yesterday, right? And I think
the
difference between Schwab and Svensson can do it on the par fives with the longer drive and then get himself out of any trouble. And Schwab can't. He's a short hitter, right? So
this course will suit him. This course
will suit him. The one concern me with Schwab is his scrambling's not good. If it comes to missing the green, I would worry a little bit about him. But the hope is, and the reason you back someone like Schwab is because you think they're going to go and hit greens and fairways for fun. So that's the approach there.
Next up
for me, he opened up 150-1 on Betfred with five places. He's now half that. He's 80-1 in the same place, and that is the biggest price. Mm-hmm. 70-1, seven places. But Darius Van Driel sort of texted you this morning just to sort of say, like, I think he's been disrespected again. It is purely because he's had that recent win. I think that Van Driel is being overlooked. And look, he hasn't played this golf course, so I can't sit there and say he definitely loves it. But I can't think of a course that I would want to take someone like Darius Van Driel at more so than this one. I mean, Kenya, obviously, where he won is easily the ones to say now. But I think he's reacted really well to that win. He was 20th after round one and 33rd after round two on his next start after that win, and just sort of faded away over the weekend, maybe run out a bit of steam. And then last week, 21st, he finished at the Singapore Classic, which is not a golf course I would necessarily even consider him at, right? So I think that 21st is almost an overachievement. The strokes gained approach numbers where he finished 8th in that category sort of backed that up. He was 18th in tee to green as well. I can really see Van Driel having a good week here, just plodding his way around.
Yeah.
And that for me is the kind of approach to it now.
Yeah, no, I agree with you when you messaged me this morning. I was close to him as well. I think his ball striking has been really solid.
Yeah.
And I'm really, as you said, I'm really impressed with how he's sort of come back after his win. Like sometimes players just drop off, don't they? And he's just, he's remained solid. So yeah, who knows, maybe this is just it's just the new him and he's just going to come and contend again and maybe win again. So
I think until someone wins once, you never know whether they're capable of winning multiple times, right? Like they have to go and get the first win and then you see how they react to it. I mean, Matthew Pavon is followed up a really late win on the DP World Tour with a win straight away on the PGA Tour. And exactly. I know I keep using him as a case study, but
it's a good case study, relevant, yeah.
Right, and I think about players like Marcel Seam, right? Like you mentioned him, and it's a good segue, I guess. That his win here, like you said, was the first one he had in 9 years. He actually went 8 years between his first and second win as well. So he won the Dunhill Championship in 2004, then won in France in 2012. Then he went 2012, 2013, 2014 to start to become a bit more consistent. But I think what people think is that Van Driel has taken so long to get a win, he's just going to not do it again. And that might, it might be the case. But there's also a case that he could go on and win five times, in total. He's got 10 years on, someone like a Marcel Seam's going to get those other wins. I don't know if he's necessarily cut out to do that. But in this level of field, in the type of event that suits him, I'm going to go with Van Driel again. So despite the fact that he's coming from those fancy prices, I am still going to back him.
Yeah, I can understand it.
And go with it. And then the final one for me, and then I'll let you take over so that I'm not just boring the listeners for me for 20 minutes. But the last one, Simon Forsstrom, again, has come in. He's now 90-1 best price. That's with five places, though. So you're probably looking more at like the 80 and 70-1 range for the extra places of Forsstrom. But you're a really big fan of Forsstrom, and it's always kind of stuck with me.
Yeah.
if you like someone, I kind of
he has his courses, and this is one of them, like the Sadao Open, I think Kenya, you know, it's premium on actually, that's when you take him.
And that's exactly how I looked at it, right? And I just thought, yep, eighth here last year, he's 67 on the final round, was I think the third best round of the day. I think there's a couple of 65s ahead of him. So that was really promising. The fact that all four of his rounds were par or better, I think that's no mean feat on your debut at DLF. I think it's a really difficult course to do that. And you just look, and yeah, there's been plenty of missed cuts this season, but when it seemingly suits, he's done okay. 27th at Qatar Masters, 56th at Dubai Invitational. You would probably have hoped that he'd have done something.
I was on him in Kenya, so that's probably on me for backing.
that's the one. You go, you know what? I wish he'd play well there, and that would kind of.
I've always liked him for Kenya, and I think he's got a good record on the Challenge Tour there. So yeah, that's why I always liked him for that. But he's never really shown up for me.
Yeah, but you would think though, wouldn't you? Like if the perfect thing I could say is like, okay, he's in 27 Qatar, he played well in Kenya where you like him, and then he's overachieved a little bit like Darius Mandrill. I think he's overachieved last week with the 29th in Singapore, where he was ninth after the first and second round. To me, he's just got that perfect type of game. As you said, there's probably four or five times a year where you think, yeah, do you know what? It's Simon Forsstrom's time. And I'm going to take a chance on that being this time. He didn't excel in ball striking. He hasn't done really.
Oh, no, he will never stand out statistically. Like, he just won't. He just does his thing, doesn't he? He gets out there. He'll scramble. He's a grinder. And that's why.
He ranked fourth in greens in regulation here last season, which I liked.
Yeah, that's good.
That's always a positive that he knew how to find the greens here, which is obviously the key to success. I'm pretty comfortable with taking Forsstrom, which I wasn't necessarily expecting coming into the week, but there we go.
Yeah, no, good time to take him.
the one concern for me, Brad, just before you come on to your final pick, is that I've just got a four pack of really short golfers. that's the concern for me, is like they probably can't hit a par five in two between them. Wiesberg is shorter. I thought, I've got Wiesberg at least, but even he's like 100 and something distance.
He's lost now, a bit of distance, yeah. But it is definitely important to have accuracy. But it's weird, a few big hitters showed up last year, so in the top 10s.
I think this is the thing, right? So when you look at that, so what concerned me a little bit is I looked at the stats last year in terms of where sort of like what stats correlated to success. And when you look at the driving distance statistic, Marcel Seam was fifth in that, and he actually obviously won the event. There was, I think it was three players inside the top five. So Marcel Seam was
fifth. Yeah, I looked at this as well.
Yannick Paul was ninth and Jorge Campillo was seventh. But the only thing I'd say about they're not historically long players, right? And they're to finish where they did in those driving distance stats last year, I think Marcel Seam only averaged 309 off the tee. All of those players can hit a 309-yard drive. So I'm not too worried. I think what it actually is that the course doesn't allow you to go and hit it 330. So any player can kind of lead if they are a little bit more aggressive, which I think Marcel Seam was last year. So, Alexander Knapp was up there. Yes, John Wonkow was up there, but not too concerned on that. So, but if I was going to play with someone just purely for distance, I think it'd be Freddie Scott. That's the long way of going into that.
Yeah, he's been brilliant, hasn't he? Been really good.
And really well. I thought last week he was someone that was worth having a look at. I think he's another one again.
I'm yet to bet him. It's crazy. Like, I keep looking at him. I'm like, oh, God, is it my time this week? And I never get there. But, yeah, I've got my eye on him.
The one I mentioned to you earlier, like, I think just as a maybe like a top 20 or a top 40, Andrew Wilson played in India last week.
That was a good shout.
Challenge Tour. And he played here last year in the Indian event, Indian PGA Tour event, as opposed to the DP World Tour event. So I think probably top 20 is kind of his bag, maybe even a top 40 if you can get odds against. But that would probably be my shout for that sort of area of the market. But Brad, give us your final selection in this
game. Yep. So I'm going to go with Veer Alawat. It's probably a name you've not heard of. Well, you probably have, but I'm sure a lot of listeners haven't. He's a 27-year-old Indian. He actually plays out of DLF Country Club. So it's a home game for him this week. He's finished 13th in this event last year. He was joint top Indian with Sharma. He was also coming into this event last year off three missed cuts on the Asian Tour. So to finish 13th was eye-catching. This time around, he's in much better form. He had a good finish in the Malaysian Open on the Asian Tour early on in the season. And he finished tied fifth last week at the Kolkata Challenge, which is the co-sanctioned Challenge Tour and PGTI event. I think he was top Indian there as well. So, yeah, that would do his confidence wonders. And, yeah, I think he could be ready to surprise a few. He was always a highly rated youngster. I mean, he's obviously 27 now, but yeah, he's a regular on the Asian Tour. He has his spots where he shows up. I think it's Indonesia, Malaysia, and back home in India. So yeah, I think I think this week, obviously he's back home playing on a course he knows, it's going to be a massive advantage, and yeah, he could surprise. So I'm gonna chance him 250-1, seven places with Ladbrokes, I think he is.
I think what the important thing, because I think everyone wants to know, who is the Indian player that we should be looking out for in the Indian Open? Like, who am I getting? Are we doing the Japanese event? Are we doing the Korean event? Like, who's going to be the home contingent? You get to the Zozo at the end of the year in a PGA Tour, and everyone goes, who's the Japanese player that can make it? And then we put up Horikawa for first round leader, and that's about as good as it gets, right? But
this is the guy, I think.
I think the thing I sort of messaged you this morning about Rahul Ganji, didn't I? And I then proceeded to Google him, realised he was, you know, 87 years old and never played on the DP World Tour. So kind of overlooked him in the end. And I think the difference between him, who's playing obviously incredibly well, you know, not just, you know, rattle off his finishes, 10th, 2nd, 2nd, 3rd, 22nd and 2nd, his last six events, you go back and there's another 11th there as well on the Indian Tour. So back at home, he's playing incredibly well, Ganji. And the last time he played his course, he finished 11th. But I think what's really important, and what you know nicely pointed out there, is that Alawat had done it in the Indian Open. Like, he finished 13th in this event last year, and I think that's massive. Like, there's so many Indians that have actually played this golf course well, but just at a different level, right?
I think raising your game in that sort of crowd is important. Like Manu Gandas, who obviously had his tour card, I think last season, he's lost it. He's gone back to the Indian Tour. He plays out of DLF as well, but he's not in as good as form at the moment. He did win earlier on in the season. He's another one that I think might be popular this week, Manu Gandas. So this is a popular golf club in Delhi, so there's quite a few that play out of it. A good youngster, Sunit Bishnoi, I don't know what price he is, but he plays out of it. He's probably a name to keep your eye on for the future. But yeah, I think Veer Alawat is the pick of the bunch. Yeah,
Sunit Bishnoi, 18th and 2nd in two starts at this golf course.
Yes, home course as well.
What price?
I can't see a price on Odds Checker. I can't see a price. But yeah, he plays out of DLF. He could be a first round leader punt maybe. He hasn't had the best starts to the season. Him and Gandas and Alawat, I think, all live in the first round leader market for sure.
I guess Gandas is probably the most settled at this level, I guess. It's probably,
yeah, at least he's had a year playing on the DP World Tour, even though he didn't really do much.
That's the problem, he didn't do it. I know he's 32nd in this event, but that's probably like what he'd expect when he comes home. So yeah, look, I think it's interesting you managed to identify someone that's actually, you know, potentially got a chance, and the fact he finished 13th here last year is huge. So big spot on that one, mate.
It's open, mate.
Yeah. The one player, or maybe a couple of players, I thought were worth looking at. I didn't get them in the end. One of them is Daniel Van Tonder. He's as big as 200-1. He's generally 125-1. I think he's playing really well, but just not outside of South Africa is the concern.
Yeah, that is the concern. Africa in general, actually, because he likes Kenya.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think he prefers a birdie fest as well.
I think it's going to be two. I mean, he did play last year and finished 50th or something like that. It's nothing to write home, but I just thought he was playing so well. That
yeah, playing well, yeah, back home. He's caught some form, yeah.
Angel Hidalgo was one I looked at.
Yeah, there.
I think he's more of a birdie fest.
But he did show up at Valderrama, didn't he? Which I think is a good comp for this week in some ways, because it's obviously tough conditions, quite strategic course. I think Hidalgo could be. He's just not playing well enough. I think he's not hitting the ball very well at the moment.
I think he's scoring without even necessarily having his best stuff. So, I mean,
the Spaniards have a good record. I mean, as I said to you, Rafa Cabrera Bello, it was probably very close to him, actually, even though he's coming off four or five missed cuts, whatever it is. He's not far away, and he had a second round 67 last week in Singapore, and his stats don't look too bad. I think he's gaining tee to green, and he's had obviously a good finish here in the past. What price is he? He's 175-1, five places, 125 eight places. Yeah, I mean, I think he could just randomly just pop. You know, he doesn't look far away. Like, I've backed people in the past, like Samuja last season, when, you know, they're coming off a bad run, but they're not far away, and he could be that guy. But I didn't get there. But yeah, that would hurt.
I think this type of event's the type that can throw up a bit of a surprise, right? Purely because it's so tough, it's so mind numbing that, like, sometimes just hanging on is going to get you in a position. Like, if you can shoot 2 under every day, you're going to be in the mix. And I just wonder if that really, so, I mean, someone like Masahiro Kawamura that was a runner up here, you know, he's certified as a classic 16 for the Qatar Masters. He was 60th last week, but he was actually 26th going into the final round. Like, 69 opening round at Kenya, he was 16th after round one. There's flashes in Kawamura. The issue is he's having that 77 every week. So
but this is him in a nutshell, isn't it? It's a type of, pardon me, it's part of, God, just had a burp and it's just throwing me off. No, it's the type of course you want to target him on. So, yeah, no, I think he's definitely one to consider. And do you know what? There's a few. I mean, we could go on all day. I mean, Nicolò Galletti, who is obviously a big favourite of Sky and Mines. Yeah. I told you this morning, I thought the best bet of the week is that Sky's probably going to back him, right?
Spoiler alert, he has.
I don't know what price I would have got. But no, I also considered him, and I think he obviously him showing up in Kenya's promising. I think he is quite an accurate hitter. I just don't know. I think this course might freak him out a little bit. I think it's very different to anything he's ever played. That's the only concern.
The other one as well. The other one sort of was actually showing a little bit of form. Another South African. So for some reason I'm on that trend at the moment. Oliver Beck has been he ranked 9th and 7th the last two in strokes gain approach, and 3rd and 8th in tee to green. His form figures 6th and 21st last two. He's got a 9th and 25th. The concern for me when it was Oliver Becker was when I looked at his missed cut last year, he shot 81-80, and I was just wondering if that's a sort of thing to come. It's not the course that can do that to anyone, I guess, but
it really is.
It's not giving you confidence, is it? So there we go. I think that's me done for the Hero India Open.
Likewise, I think we've summarised it pretty well.
Yeah, an event I'm looking forward to, but one that I probably, beyond the ones I've picked, kind of struggle to really nail down. Let's go then to the Houston Open. It's not a surprise that Scotty Scheffler is favourite. It might be a surprise to people that he's 11-4 to win a PGA Tour event, but that's just the circumstances we're in.
He's shortened up from 3-1.
I know.
He looked about 10 minutes ago.
I think it's because he's like 9-4 now, isn't he? Or 7-2, whatever he is for the Masters now. I think people are just sort of saying, well, you know, he hasn't got to beat the Masters field to win. So, it is what it is. I don't know how you necessarily find a negative about Scott Scheffler. Is his neck okay? I guess it's probably the one question I would have. I guess it is, if he's not in the field.
Just got to hope he has like one off day out of the four that might cost him the the title.
You look at it, he's 9-2 to win at Augusta and he's 11-4 to win this. Actually, there's this argument to be made that maybe his value, I mean, I can't make it because I don't
know. I know what you mean, yeah. If you look at it like that.
Wyndham Clark is 12-1. Zalatoris, and then it's a decent drop off. Zalatoris 22-1, Sahith Theegala 22-1, Tony Finau and Jason Day 25-1.
Mm-hmm.
I think that presents a massive opportunity. Like, I mean, to be fair, I think Wyndham Clark deserves to be the price he is. Well, I say deserves to be 12. I think he deserves to be a strong second favourite. I thought 12-1 was a bit punchy.
I think 12-1's a bit short.
But I think what it's done is it's opened up the opportunity for the people that will look at Zalatoris, Theegala, Finau, Day, and rightly so. I think all of them make claims, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Finau, former winner here. Also, let's jump into that correlation quickly before I rattle the rest off. But the reason I kind of like the look of Finau, or like the look of what Finau's done, is because he won the Mexico Open right up there and then won here. Ben Taylor, third here, eighth for the Mexico Open. Alex Smalley, 15th and fourth here, sixth for the Mexico Open. Stephen Yeager, ninth here, third, 15th and 18th for Mexico. Bramlett, ninth here, 10th for Mexico. That's Joseph Bramlett. Patrick Rogers, 16th here, three top tens in Mexico. Martin Traynor, fifth here, when he was the 36th hole leader, and 11th in Mexico. Aaron Ryan, 19th and seventh here, 19th in Mexico. So all that to say that potentially there's just this correlation between the Mexico Open and Texas. Now, geography is not the best, but they're not a million miles apart. Brad, isn't the border there, I think? Potentially. So that might be a thing. Also, potentially just gives big drivers a chance to have a go as well. I think a couple of perks of that.
That's an interesting correlation for sure. One I didn't see.
No, I mean, I think I was desperately trying to find a way to back certain players, and that's how I managed to find it.
Love it.
But there we go. There was one player in that list of names I just rattled off that you're starting your card with, mate. So give us the introduction on Sahith Theegala.
Yeah, Sahith Theegala stood out for me at the top. Despite only winning once, he does strike me as that personality that can beat Scotty. You know, he looks like he's got the gonads on him to do it. So, yeah, I think he has pushed on this year as well. He's been a lot more consistent. He's been getting results, even when his ball striking hasn't been on point. That's what happened last time out of the Players. He finished ninth. He ranked out first in the field for putting. So he's finding a way to get results, which is good to see. He's had three top 10 finishes this year. He had that runner-up at the Century at the beginning of the year as well. He's just missed one cut. So, yeah, very solid. His game off the tee has been a standout for him, and that's obviously going to be important this week. He also has that excellent touch around the green, also on the green as well, which is going to be important around this course. And yeah, he's played there a couple of times before. He was 61st on his first visit, 22nd last year, closed to around a 64. And obviously now he lives in Houston, so it's going to be a home game for him this week. And I expect with a week off the at the Valspar, I think he's going to have a good look at the Memorial Park this week. So, yeah, he's going to be popular. He's going to be popular, but it's for good reason. I do think he's sort of in that crowd that can beat Scotty Scheffler.
Yeah, look, I think, yeah, I've been pretty high on Theegala for a while now. I think Theegala is a major contender. I think it was Steve Bamford sort of said he's one of the players at the top that won't have half an eye on Augusta because he won't think he can win it. And I actually disagree with that sentiment. I think he goes in there thinking he can win it. And I think a win this week would really boost that confidence. So I do like Sahith Theegala. It was close for me. It's only because he's kind of come in that little bit to generally available 20-1 that potentially sort of maybe pause. So I normally like to take a bit of 28s or 30s about Theegala, but it's all relative, right? Like there's, I mean, he's got to be the best player in the world. But other than that, it's a relatively weak field. So do understand it. It was him or Jason Day really for me at the top. Day was interesting as well. But again, similar sort of price conversation with him. The very next person up on that that list of golfers I've purposely not mentioned, so you can sort of lead in with him, is Siwoo Kim.
Yeah, Siwoo Kim. I feel like 33-1 is just a really big price on him. He's yet to miss a cut this year. He's gained strokes off the tee in his last 22 PGA Tour events, which is just mental, really. He's just been so consistent off the tee. He had his best result of the season last time out at the Players, finished sixth. That was thanks to a final round of 64. He was once again brilliant off the tee, but he also gained strokes everywhere else. So that's good to see. So it was an all-round solid display. I just think that's a good platform to build on coming into this week's test. You know, there's a demanding tee to green test. So I think coming off that week at the Players, it stands him well. And yeah, he's played it twice before. He's missed the cut on his first visit. He then finished 35th last year, where he shot three rounds in the 60s and was 20th heading into the final round. But yeah, he had a bit of a stinker on the final round. But yeah, worth noting that he wasn't coming into the event in the best of form last year. He was 45th at the Zozo, 52nd at the CJ Cup. So yeah, I think that result looks pretty good. Obviously, he's coming into this week in good form, so I like that. And also like Tagala, he's a Texas resident, so he will also be looking forward to a home game this week. He's had some decent results in Texas, runner-up at the Byron Nelson last year, fourth at the Texas Open, ninth at the World Match Play, and he's had four further top 20s. So yeah, he's good in Texas, which is nice to see. He can obviously be a frustrating player to bet on, but it's also worth reminding that he is a four-time PGA Tour winner that is in excellent form. So yeah, if he got in contention with Scotty, I don't think he would melt like others would. I think he'd welcome the challenge. So yeah, I think in this field, 33-1, he looks a good bet. He looks a really good bet.
I think the only thing Siwoo's not really shown to do in his career so far is contending a major, right?
I haven't contended, no. He's had a couple of all right finishes, but not contended. Yeah.
So I think with the places, when they all come out and they're 12 places on the week of the Masters, I think he's going to be a really popular bet. I think he's like 150-1 at the moment for the Masters. It's just bubbling under the surface. He missed a cut in his debut, but he's been 24th, 21st, 34th, 12th, 39th, 29th for the Masters since. Really solid record.
Yeah.
He's this golfer, right? And that he came on, youngest ever winner of the Players, followed up with another couple of wins. Had a couple of playoff losses that were disappointing, at least one playoff loss, so I can remember, it was disappointing. And then Sung Jae-im and Tom Kim come along. And that's all that's really happened.
Yeah, it just stole his thunder a bit, didn't it?
It's just two other people have come along. Like, there really hasn't really much changed in Siwoo Kim's game, right? Like, he's not the most consistent, but he wins at a pretty decent clip, 2016, 2017, 2021, 2023. They've all been relatively decent wins. Yeah, three playoff losses he's had. So he could, yeah, conceivably could be a seven-time win. No, it doesn't work like that. But
I actually think he's been consistent this year. He just hasn't really contended. Him to be this consistent. He's normally a lot more erratic, and there's a few more missed cuts in there, but he hasn't missed a cut this year.
So I think that's almost hurting him. I think he's so used to being this volatile golfer of like, oh, am I going to miss a cut or win? And that's what his whole career has been. He's probably like,
maybe he's evolving. Maybe he's just like Mr. Consistent now, and he's just going to just win off a 64 at the Players. You know, like, I don't know.
It's either going to really help him. I mean, look, he was fifth after every round at the American Express before finishing 25th. So he's actually in the mix there. He was 14th.
He was in the mix there. Yeah, well remembered.
12th at Phoenix, so he's probably been a little bit closer than maybe he's getting credit for. I think with Siwoo Kim, it's just one of those. I just see him as this golfer it hasn't happened this year purely because, as we said, it's more consistent than normal. But he's one of those players that as soon as he has a couple of bad weeks, he goes out to 75-1 or something. He feels like a really appealing bet.
Yeah,
I had much success with him at Shorts of Risings, but that's just a personal thing. Something I probably shouldn't do too
well. No, I understand it.
Next for me, so I'm gonna kick us off here now. Billy Horschel is 55 to 1 with 8 places. You can get 50 to 8 places if you can't bet 8 sport. Horschel loves Texas. Like, I'll be surprised that, you know, he doesn't go down the Webb Simpson route at some point and name a kid Tex or something. Won the match play in Austin, won the Byron Nelson and McKinney. He was second in this event at a different golf course, third and fourth at the Valero. He might, you know, literally, I mean, why he doesn't live here, I don't know. He might as well live here because that's where he sort of makes his career. He's been steadily improving. Ninth at the Honda Classic, 12th last week at the Valspar, 21st and 18th in approach in those two starts, 8th and 17th in tee to green. When Billy Horschel will start showing that little bit of ball striking in a part of the, you know, country that he really excels in, I'm always going to play him. And I'm guessing it's just this move, Brad, from November to March or October to March, whatever it was, that's maybe encouraged him to play because he skips this event. So I don't know if he just gets to the part of the year and just goes, no, I can't be bothered.
I think it also motivation. I think he might want to play the Masters, right? Yeah. I think he's obviously not in it. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, if he ever win this week, he'd be in it.
Yeah. So I think that's generally on the cards. Like, I think that's the type of player he is. You get a couple of weeks before he goes bang, there's a win. Very accomplished player. Type of player, like you said, with Kim, if he gets down the stretch with Scottie Scheffler, I trust him. And that's what you've got to bank on at the moment is,
yeah,
is getting your man stuff up against Scottie Scheffler, and that's what we're doing. So, yeah, Billy Horschel for me is one of those I'm picking to do that.
Yeah, like it.
Next one for me was the first person I texted you about this morning. He was 100 to 1 at the time that I texted you, and I couldn't for the life of me figure out why. I expected him to be shorter just purely because we hear his name all the time. But it's Joel Damon, who is now best priced. I think he's still at 80 to 1 about Joel Damon. He was 100 to 1 with 6 places earlier. 70 to 1, 8 places is probably the best now. But he's finding form again, Brad. And it's been a... it's 15th and 3rd the last two in strokes gain approach. And he's been 3rd and 15th in those two starts in tees green as well. And like you said, Brad, flashes. Like, it's been flashes for 2024. Yeah. And then... just the last 3 weeks, 49th in Puerto Rico, we had two middle rounds of 68, 11th at the Players' Championship, where he got better as the week went on. And then 49th last week was disappointing, but the ball striking was there, and I'm fine with that, because when you look at his course record, 5th and 9th in two starts, and that the 5th came from basically a really good final round, went out of contention, he shot a 65. But the second time around last year, or 2 years ago, he was... in ninth place, but he was 6th going into the final round. He was actually better placed going into Sunday. So he was kind of in the mix all week long without, again, being right at the top of that. Do I envision Joel Damon winning? Yes, I think I do. I think he definitely can. I think that when he got that first win, I felt like it was going to be, okay, he's going to kick on now and become a little bit more serious, and that's going to be the next step to Joel Damon. He's actually really good, like everyone says. And then he goes on that Netflix documentary, and I think it gets to him a little bit. He becomes a bit too popular for his own good. He takes his top off at Phoenix, and things are up. And I think just little things have got in the way of his on-the-course attitude. And you see that in the second series of Full Swing. And this is why I was so surprised he opened up at 100-1, Brad. It's like,
yeah,
I just feel like he's right at the top of everyone's mind at the moment, and then suddenly he's had two really good ball striking weeks, and comes to a course that he plays well, and he's still 70-28 places.
No, exactly that, mate. Nail on the head. It's a mispriced. It looks a mispriced. It's obviously a really good course for him, and yeah, he's coming into form with his ball striking. So yeah, I don't know. It's a bit of a no brainer really when you look at it. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm going in with Joel Damon. So I'm starting my card with, not conservative, but solid players in terms of Billy Horschel and Joel Damon. And then next up for me is Carl Yuan, who we sort of spoke about a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Good player at his very peak. He's 150 to 1, 6 places, 125 to 1, 8 places. I'd probably take the 8. based on the type of player he is. But really weird with Yuan. He's like he's either going to miss the cut or he's going to be there or thereabouts. And I can't quite put my finger on. He was fourth at the Sony Open. He was the 36-hole leader there, and then was 13th after round three, shot 70, and then shot 63 to come back on the Sunday and, you know, and pad that finish off nicely. He goes into two missed cuts, then a withdrawal, then a 52nd, then a missed cut, then a missed cut, and then bang, fifth again last week.
Yeah.
And I think that, I mean, you sort of pointed out to me, he's never backed up.
That's the only thing that really stood out for me, that he's never really backed up a top 10. It's always like a fourth, or like then he's like nearly missed a cut or again for missed cut, or you look at even in the Korn Ferry Tour days, he struggled with it. So that's the only thing.
I wonder if it's like he resets his expectations, like, and he goes, you know what, I need to win next week because I played so well, and then he just goes, nah. I've like miscut.
Yeah, it's just something I noticed.
It's weird, isn't it? But last year he was fifth here after two rounds. Then he shot a 77 on Saturday and sort of steadied the ship on Sunday with a 69, but wasn't good enough to finish higher than 35th in the end. But I mean, I know I rambled on a little bit there, but in that midst of me saying he went fifth and then a few miscuts, he had a 52nd in Mexico, which on the face of it sounds pretty disappointing. But he was ninth after round two, because you shot second round 65. Mm. And if anyone can cast their memory back 20 minutes or so ago, I sort of said the link between Mexico and Houston being a bit of a factor for me. So that was how I finally landed on Yuan. You had in the good finish last week, and look, he's got a history of not backing him up, but hopefully he does this time around. So skills.
He held out three times last week. I don't know if you saw it. It was crazy.
Yeah. Does that mean that we shouldn't be backing him because he's just got, you know?
No. There were three really good shots. Like, it weren't just like hit the pin and drop. Like, I think there would have been tap-ins anyway. So, yeah.
No, look, 19th in approach last week, fourth in tee green overall. We know he can send it out there on his best day. So, looking forward to Carl Yuan. And then he's
dancing. Oh, sorry. One more thing, Tom. I was going to say he's also finished fifth at the Veritex Bank Championship in Texas as well, which is, you know, worth noting. Yeah, so he's got a bit of history in Texas.
That's good. It's always a good addition. So, Carl Yuan there. I would take the extra places if you can. 125 to 1, but 150 to 1 is a nice price, considering it looks like he's going to be pretty volatile anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Final pick for me, and then we'll come on to your final selection. I think I don't know what joke I made about this golfer before. It wasn't complimentary. I think someone said he was 400 to 1. I said he should be 4,000 to 1 or something like that. But Martin Trainer is now 250 to 1 8 places, and suddenly I want to bet on him. So I'll give you the reasons to why. I think a lot of people look at a player and they go, oh, look, he played here well last year. Let's just go for it. And that isn't the case with Martin Trainer. That's not why I've done it. It's obviously a big help, and that's what kind of puts you there in the first place. But what I actually did was use Martin Trainer as the guide as to why he's, you know, why people play well here. Why have we seen Tyson Alexander? Why have we seen Ben Taylor and all those sort of things? Ben Taylor, you know, tallied up with the Mexico Open thing that I liked. But the Trainer was 11th in Mexico in that Mexico Championship. He was fifth here, obviously, when he had the chance to win. He was 36-hole leader. He won the El Bosque Championship on the Korn Ferry. Again, another long Mexican test. Mm-hmm. He's also 19th in the Mexico Open this year, and that adds to his three top eight finishes, his last five starts. So 19th, two fifths, and eighth in his last five starts. Now, disclaimer, the eighth and the fifth were on the Korn Ferry Tour and another fifth on the International Series event, but that all seems to be pretty strong form. Those international series events seem to get stronger as they go on. The live entrance, Korn Ferry Tour, we know there's not too much of a gap now between the very best on there and the kind of people that can compete in this type of event. So I think just the way that the Frenchman Martin Trainer is trending, I'm pretty happy with the 251-8 places.
Yeah, I like it a lot. It's not someone I looked at, to be completely honest with you, and now I am looking at him, I can completely see why you've gone with him.
It's the polar opposite of anyone I would ever go for. It's just, I just look at it and I think someone, like, if I saw someone put him up on Twitter, I'd go, look, you're just backing him because he finished fifth here 2 years ago. There's no reason to think he's going to do that. But this time around, it really does. You know, I think he's playing really well at the right time. Another player that I've caught my eye in that similar vein, he hasn't done it here yet, but that Mac Meisner is 400-1.
So funny that you mentioned him. I was going to mention him as well. Yeah, another Texas local. Two good finishes back to back. Yeah,
I just, like, I don't know. I mean, the fact that you've added the Texas thing there is news to me. I didn't look that far into it. But yeah, the way he's been playing, Meisner, you know, missed his first three cuts, but then finished 53rd at the Honda, 23rd at Puerto Rico, and 26th last week at the Valspar. I think that's quite encouraging. So
I completely agree. Yeah, he looks to be finding his feet. That was weird. Like, we never even talked about him. You said it, and I was like, I was going to say, yeah, he's a potential top 40 bet this week. But yeah, he does look to be finding his feet. He really does. So yeah, he's definitely one to consider.
Did you know much about him on the, I'm guessing, from the Corn Ferry Tour?
Unfortunately, yeah, I don't think he won, but yeah, he was pretty steady. Don't really know much about him, if I'm completely honest. His brother still plays, Mitchell Meisner. He still plays on the Corn Ferry Tour. They sort of had they went through the route of Latin America and then onto the Corn Ferry, I think. Yeah, but yeah, as for actual playing style, I don't really, what their strengths are, I can't say I know too much about them.
There we go. We'll have a little look into that. But someone's maybe worth keeping an eye on, but.
Yeah.
Brad, let's round off this podcast with the home run pick of the week.
Yes, so another wild long shot. this time Cole Hammer, 400-1, 8 places, coming a little bit. But you can also get 750-1 Bet Victor or Betfred 5 places. So I think I'm going to say split your stakes on the two. I think that's the way to do it. But yeah, it was obviously Ricky Castillo last week. And you know what? Castillo just missed the cut on the number. He got off to a crappy start, 73, I think, he opened with, and then he shot a couple under, missed the cut on the number. So I mean, PGA Tour debut, it's weren't a bad effort from him. Anyway, besides the point, it's Cole Hammer this week, and yeah, like Castillo, he was also a top 10 amateur in the world, bundles of talent. He is also in on a sponsored exemption. He's a Houston local who has also got off to a really good start to his Corn Ferry Tour season. He's finished 27th, 6th, 10th and 26th in his last four starts. He has some experience playing on the PGA Tour, which I like a lot, because that might have been Castillo's downfall last week. Obviously, the occasion getting to him. But yeah, he's made 17 appearances in the last couple of years. His best result of 5th. Came at the RSM Classic. He's twice played in the Houston Open. He made the cut as an amateur in 2019. That was when it was at Houston Golf Club.
Yep.
And then in 2022, he finished 27th. That was at Memorial Park. And that was also after opening with a round of 74. So yeah, there's a lot to like. It's obviously been an absolute wild year on the PGA Tour. Malnati added to that last week. So yeah, I'm all for taking a chance on Cole Hammer. It was 400-1, 8 places. And as I said, I'd split your stake with a 750, you know, go for it, why not? And yeah, a good week could be life changing for him. So let's go for it.
Cole Hammer was so well regarded coming out. I mean, he's only 24 now, right? And coming out of the University of Texas.
Oh, he was. Yeah, that's what you hear about for a while.
He was the best amateur golfer in the world in 2019. Now, you know, literally given that award. I'm just going to maybe look at the most recent recipients of that award. Gordon Sargent won it last year. Nakajima 2 years before that. Takumi Kanaya, Braden Thornberry, Joaquin Neiman 2017, John Rahm 2015. Mavin McNeely 2016. It's not a bad little list of golfers, is it? Patrick Cantlay 2011, Peter Uline 2010. So Nick Taylor 2009, if you want to go back that far. So Fitz 2013. It's been generally awarded to people that have gone on and had steady PGA Tour careers. And obviously in John Rahm's case, a major winning career, same as Fitz as well. It's you know, an identifier of talent. He's been well talked about for a long time. I'm actually surprised they're hanging that sort of number on him. I feel like they would have just like...
I can't believe it. Honestly, when I backed Ricky Castilla 300-1 last week, I thought, oh, that's pretty big as well. But like, I could understand it. But this, I thought maybe Cole Hammer might be 250, you know, 200, 250, you know. That'd be fine. I'd probably still take him. You know, I'd still take him.
It'd just be easy, wouldn't it, for the player that, you know, has massive Texas links, has got two top tens in his last three starts on the Corn Ferry, just to make him too short or make people just take a short number. But yeah, I'm surprised he's that big.
It's a big prize. I'm hoping to get a good number for him, top 40 as well.
1,000-1 on Betfair. Anyone wants to go and live that dream?
There you go. Live that dream. Got to live that dream.
Yeah. I get it. I definitely understand that pick. I wasn't one that I was necessarily going for. I thought I was going in the weeds with Martin Trainer, but there we go. I noticed as well, pretty sure one of the Coodies have been playing okay. Parker Coody have been playing.
Yeah, well. I looked at both of them as well. Obviously, they've got Texan ties.
Parker Coody, 24th in Mexico, which obviously I love. Started slowly there with 72 as well. 47th at the Honda, 11th going into the final round, and 67th last week. Seems to have settled into life a little bit. Brother, maybe.
Hayden Springer's been impressive, and he's from Texas as well. So he's someone that I considered. He's sort of been getting there. I think he had a poor round last week that cost him, but he's been in contention. Where was it? Puerto Rico. I think he played really well. 250-1. It's quite a big price.
The one player that I don't think, I haven't necessarily looked at what other people are saying about this event yet, but I just can't imagine it's going to get that much talked about, is Jake Knapp. I know we're going at a different end of the betting scale now, but...
Yeah.
Obviously, if my Mexico thing rings true, then obviously he was the winner of that. And it just feels like now he's going to be able to sort of give it a bit of a bash off the tee again.
Mm-hmm. He could be anything, couldn't he? Like, he really could be. Like, he's obviously had such a strong start to his PGA Tour career. It's just like, it's sort of, he has fallen away the last couple of weeks, but still.
I think that was, you know, the Players Championship and then Valspar, not really his sort of thing.
He went in Texas. Yeah, no, I agree. He's got a good record in Texas on the Corn Ferry Tour as well. Yeah. 7th and 35th. So, yeah.
Yeah, he added the fact that he obviously likes repeat, like he was 9th for the El Bos Mexico Championship before winning on the PGA Tour, so probably should have been like obvious really what he was going to go and do there. I mean, he was, of course, the shortest price winner of the year, wasn't he? But that's the sort of year we've had. But yeah, I just feel like the bubble might have burst. It wasn't Valspar, was it? It was Bay Hill and that finished 57th. But I think people will think the bubble was burst because he's finished 57th and 45th the last 2 weeks. I don't necessarily subscribe to that notion. I think it could be just dependent for him. So there we go. One thought there before we sign off. But any other sort of things on your mind there, bro?
No, not at all. No, I think we've both got to have a placement bet on Mac Meisner now.
Yeah.
Considering we both brought him up. So yeah.
So there's telepathy there. Is that the right word? Telepathy?
Yeah, it is.
It's too late in the night for me to think about those sort of words.
Yeah, my head's going a bit as well.
Brad, let's summarise our picks. So at the Hero Indian Open, Bernd Wiesberger from here at 25-1. Matthias Schwab is now 60-1, 7 places. I still think that's okay. Darius van Driel, 70-1, 7 places. Simon Forsstrom, 70-1, 7 places for me there as well. So that's my 4 picks in the Hero Indian Open. Brad, your 3?
I've gone with Joos Luiten. You can get 26-1 spread X, 6 places if you have that. If not, you can get 25-1 Unibet or Betfred. Then I've gone with Bernd Wiesberger, which is like yourself, 25-1 Skybet, 6 places. And then I've gone with the Alawat as the sneaky home Indian play this week, 250-1 Ladbrokes, 7 places. And you can boost that to 275-1 as well if you've got that available. So
very nice. That's the way to do it. Over in Houston, then, I'm sort of taking on the top of the market a little bit. And if I'm going to get a player to do that, it's going to be Billy Horschel. 55-1 8 places best price, 50-1 8 places generally available. Joel Damon is now, he was obviously 100-1 6 places when I wrote this up, but he's now sort of best price. He's still at 80-1, but 70-1 8 places is generally the way to go there. Mm-hmm. Carl Yuan has gone from 115 sort of 125 to one with the 8 places, and then Martin Trainer is 250-1, and that is still with 8 places with William Hill. So those are my picks for the Houston Open. Brad, your picks?
I'm going to go with Sahith Tagala, 22-1, 6 places Unibet. You can take 20-1, 8 places if you prefer that. Then I'm going with Siwoo Kim, 33-1, 6 places again with Unibet. I think if you want the 8 places, you can take him with Paddy Power or William Hill. It's 28-1. And then my big bomb for this one is Cole Hammer, 400-1, 8 places Sky Bet. And I'm also going to take him 750-1 with Bet Victor or Betfred, 5 places, and just split the stakes on what you'd normally put on him. And yeah.
Get some on the old thousands one as well.
I'll tell you. Oh, yeah. Lump on at the thousands as well, Betfair.
Tell you who I don't want to win this week, and it's Aaron Baddeley. For whatever reason, this guy will not leave my brain. I wouldn't go as far as to say that I go to sleep at night thinking about Aaron Baddeley, fortunately, but yeah, he just seems to be sort of on the periphery of doing well again. And he's actually, you know, when you talk about sort of tough golf courses, the sort of thing that he does, he was sixth going into the weekend at the Valspar, but I thought I was going to miss the boat. I'll start cursing my screen.
I think you've got to bet him on the exchange every week, mate.
The reason I'm sort of pausing on him in terms of actually putting him up as a sort of serious selection is this. It's purely short game. It really is just, I mean, he gained on approach last week very marginally, but it's generally speaking just a great pattern around the green game that's keeping him going. Mm-hmm. But if he suddenly has a good iron week, he could generally win, I think. I can't keep getting stuck into random people.
No, the two players I don't want to win are Afner Barmra and Mackenzie Hughes for obvious reasons.
They would be cruel. I mean, look, I actually think Mackenzie Hughes is a decent bet this week.
I looked at him and I was like, oh, I can't do it. He's broke my heart. Both of them broke my heart. I'm not ready to go back yet.
I need you to come in with a clear mind, so I don't need you backing Mac Hughes back to back. We'll save him. Is he in Augusta? We'll save him for Augusta.
Actually, don't mind him for Augusta, actually.
Yes, if he's that added length, he's
all right. His court game. Good sneaker place.
Brad, that's it for the Indian Open and the Houston Open. Two decent betting events, I think. So back again next week.